Welcome back into the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, Fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. Again, Apple, Spotify, like, rate, review, do your thing. We are continuing on this scouting series, what to watch for when watching position X. We have two positions left. We have safety and we have offensive line. Today, we're going to dive into safety as I am still holding steady out strong for a really awesome offensive line guest that needed a little extra time to get settled in this summer. So I'm more than willing to hold out for that guest though. So that's kind of what we're waiting on with offensive line there. But joining me to talk about safeties today is Dalton Miller. So Dalton Miller has his own Patreon where you can find all of his draft content. He's also a Cowboy. He covers the Cowboys as well. Dalton and I have become pretty good acquaintances through draft Twitter, through draft content. Met him at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama in 2020. He is formerly of Pro Football Network as well, but he left them to kind of launch his own thing, his Patreon. So if you have a chance, check out that Patreon, subscribe to Dalton, give him some love as well. But he has a huge passion for talking safeties. So that's what we did. We chopped up safeties. And again, this is the second to last episode of the scouting series. So I hope you guys have really enjoyed it. So yeah, let's do it. Let's dive right into that conversation with Dalton about what to watch for when scouting safeties. All right. Now, again, continuing on our scouting series, what to watch for when watching certain positions. We have made it pretty far into the series so far. So now we're on the defensive side of the ball. We're talking about safeties today. And to bring on talking about safeties, I'm going to bring on my good friend, Dalton Miller. Dalton, how's it going, man?
Fantastic. I am always down to talk ball. I'm just coming off of a 10-day vacation where I didn't watch or talk about football at all. So I am itching to get back into it, get into the 2025 film evaluation. I am ready to finally have the opportunity again to dive into the draft year round.
I love it. And again, Dalton's stuff can be found on Patreon. He's got a Patreon link on his Twitter profile, Dalton B. Miller. Again, he's formerly with PFN, now doing Patreon stuff, YouTube stuff, Twitch stuff. So that's where you can find all of Dalton's work. He's extremely good. I've had the pleasure of meeting Dalton at the Senior Bowl in 2020. That's a long time ago now. Yeah, a long time ago. Jeez. But I've had the opportunity to meet Dalton, talk with Dalton in person. And then just staying in contact through social media. It's crazy how, especially on draft Twitter, Twitter team seems to be the best place to network with people in this space. It's a very odd thing, but yeah, Dalton, I'm excited to have you on, talk some safeties. So first, let's just talk about safeties. Let's talk about safeties and why I think they're growing in importance. I don't think I'll ever coin a safety, and you might disagree with this, and feel free to yell at me if you do, but I don't think I would coin safeties as a premium position. But what we do see is the Chiefs are a great example of this. The Chiefs create explosives out of 12 personnel like nobody's business. And a lot of that is they have Travis Kelce who can create after the catch, right? They've got receivers who can create after the catch, but they live in 12 personnel for the most part. And because of that, I feel like that puts, and they're not the only ones. It's a trend in the NFL now. 12 personnel is growing. People just live in 12 personnel offensively. And part of the reason that is it forces opposing defenses to play the personnel game. If a team comes out with two tight ends, do we leave a third linebacker on the field? Do we stay in base? Or do we put a fifth defensive back on the field, right? So, but if they see that fifth defensive back is a nickel, like, well, they can just check to a run. If they see they do leave a third linebacker on the field, we'll just throw it to a tight end who's going to mismatch on that third linebacker. So I feel like having a safety who's not a liability against the run, but also who can hold his own against a tight end or hold his own, like, in terms of range or against the pass as well, is like, that's the ultimate advantage to combating 12 personnel. But it doesn't seem like we're quite there yet, right?
Yeah, I think what you saw from teams, at least in 2022, I don't have the numbers in front of me for 2023, but like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Dallas Cowboys had three safeties play over 900 snaps in 2022. They run a lot of cover one man coverage, and having somebody like J. Ron Kearse, who – I had my issues with him and his game overall, especially when it came to the versatility in coverage with him, just wasn't really there. But he's a 6'4 dude who is about 230 pounds. He can run with tight ends and he can defend the run. And I think if you have an overhang type guy like that at safety, somebody who is on the bigger side, obviously your Kyle Hamiltons are kind of your freaks of nature who are first round guys who can play, you know, any position on the in the defensive backfield, unless you want him to man up against like a 5'9" slot guy, just because anatomically the 6'4" guy is just not going to be able to stick with him in man coverage. And that's the issue that we have with these 6'4" cornerbacks as well. But when it comes to defending against 12 personnel, I think that big nickel personnel is more of what the base defense is going to become at the NFL level. Somebody who, he's not a linebacker because he can't be a full-time linebacker, you know, against the run, but he's also not a liability against the pass, specifically against tight ends.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a great segue into, it's a buzzword in draft Twitter and in this industry. And I've kind of started to fight back. When I first started, I was like, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think to an extent, the term positional value does make a lot of sense. But like, I've gotten to the point where it was like, well, if a team thinks a guy's a good football player and they know how to use him, like, just take him, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, we're talking about positional value of a safety, particularly. You mentioned Kyle Hamilton. That dude has range. That dude will fit the run. That dude can one-on-one in the nickel. So yeah, when you have a guy like that, it makes a lot of sense that that guy could be a first-round pick. So when we're talking about the positional value of safeties, do you think, even if they're not like a Kyle Hamilton, but you know, I think the Detroit Lions are a great example of this, right? Like, they don't have a lot of holes and they hit on a lot of draft picks leading up to the 2023 NFL draft, where they said, you know what? We want to take an explosive playmaker at running back. We want to take a linebacker in the first round to fill some of these other holes. Say like a team is just missing a free safety. Do you think, well, there's this really rangy free safety that would really fit this piece of our defense. Do you think that player is worth a first round pick in that instance? Or do you think no, because you know, there are rangy free safeties and there are box safeties and traditionally, like, occasionally you'll find one who can play the nickel. Do you think those guys are better off just like piecing a puzzle piece together on day two, day three to build a room with?
Yeah, it's really tough, I think, specifically at safety and specifically just with the turnover at the NFL level, because, you know, take somebody like Jesse Bates, for example, who I think is the premier true free safety in the NFL. And I think that we saw that in Atlanta. But when you get him in a defense like Lou Anarumo's, where it's a little bit more too high stuff, a little bit more split safeties, some more quarters, I think that his overall value is lessened a little bit because of the versatility of that defense. If you tell him, go play the middle of the field in cover three or in cover one, let you be that rangy athlete, that rangy free safety, I think is where his best fit is. So I think specifically speaking, there are opportunities to take these guys in round one. But then if your coaching staff gets fired and you want to bring a guy in who's going to play a bunch of quarters, does that guy have the versatility to also be a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro at that position? And I think that's where Lou Anarumo and that defense was like, okay, like, we don't need to pay Jesse Bates that much money to be a split field safety. And I think what Cincinnati does that is so unique to so many other teams is they kind of draft a year ahead. They'll draft a corner if they think, oh, well, we're going to let Chido Awuzie walk. Or they'll draft safeties if they say, hey, we're going to let Dax Hill walk. We're going to draft a defensive lineman. And they actually waited until DJ Reader was gone to draft a defensive tackle this year. But I do think that there are specific situations and defenses where it can fit. The problem is when you have a good defensive coordinator, they're probably going to either move on to be a head coach or end up getting fired because your football team isn't good enough. So I think you need the overall versatility of a Derwin James or a Kyle Hamilton to be a true first round player. But in specific situations, there's always time to go out and get that guy when you really want him.
Yeah, I think that makes a great deal of sense. And now, like, looking back, it's like, did the Jets think that was Jamal Williams? Because I don't think that was ever Jamal Williams' tape, and that guy went like fifth overall.
Jamal Adams?
Or yeah, Jamal, yeah, yeah, Jamal
yeah.
Adams, yeah.
But yeah, no, yeah. you're right. Yeah, yeah.
It's just, and then you do find some guys like, I love Trevon Moore out of TCU when he got drafted by the Raiders, and I was like, that guy could go first round, but again, he was kind of more that true guy that fell today to the second round as well. Moving on to actually evaluating the safety position. So Again, all these other positions we've done, we've kind of gotten to like the nitty gritty details. And I messaged Dalton about this. I was like, safety is a hard one to come up with just an itinerary for, a rundown for, because it's like, there are like so many people look for so many different things. It's not like a running back you're looking for, like, does this guy have vision? Like for a safety, you're like, well, can he check one of the three boxes? Can he check two of the three boxes? And within that one particular box, how does he check those things? So it's a very weird position to break down. And I think it's a position where even the analytics community has said, like, safeties are tough, man. Like, for the most part, we can come up with some pretty good data from all these other positions, but we don't know what to do with safeties. So what do you think makes evaluating safety so hard?
Yeah, I mean, I think safeties and linebackers are the two biggest ones that are really, really tough, especially at the college level when you're talking about linebackers, just because their role at the college level is way different than what it most likely will be at the NFL level. But when it comes to safeties, there's just so much that goes into being a safety. I mean, a safety can literally be a nickel guy, somebody who lines up in the slot for most of his plays, or he can be a guy who is a single high guy. You can also be a split field guy. You can play more as an overhang third linebacker type. There's just so many different ways to utilize a safety. And depending on what your defense does specifically, their roles are completely different from what they might be at the NFL level as well. So you take a guy, say, from Nick Saban's system or Kirby Smart's defensive system, and what I look for in those guys is going to be completely different from what I look for in, you know, your more Iowa, you know, defensive schemes where they're running a lot more middle of the field close cover three stuff, because that role is so much different. So then you have to figure out, well, can I like project this Iowa safety to a quarters based defense? I mean, what kind of sense does that make in the grand scheme of things? Or, you know, I love the twitch that he has in his lower body. I love how he processes things and is able to show range in cover three. But is he going to be able to read through number two to number one and understand route combinations and what guy he needs to pick up in quarters defense at the next level, if I never saw it at the college level? And that's what makes, say, you know, a guy like Cooper DeJean, who, listen, I know a lot of people really loved his tape at corner. I did not love his tape at corner whatsoever. But then it's like, well, I haven't really seen it at safety because he just didn't play the position. So how do I look at this? How do I project him at that position? And the way that I looked at it was more from the cover three lens of, this is how I see him read route combinations from one to number two at corner. And I believe that he has the overall intelligence to survive the learning curve at safety, depending on the scheme, because then in a quarters-based defense, when you do need to cover number two vertically, does he have the hip fluidity and explosiveness to turn and burn with a guy like Jameson Williams, who runs a 4-3? And then you're trying to project if Cooper DeJean can do that athletically, and it just convolutes the process of evaluating safety, because there is so much that you have to think about with that position. You're muted.
Cool stuff. And then, yeah, Dalton, a second part to that question then is something we hear pretty frequently as well, is that because, again, if it's a, especially if it's a middle of the field close cover three safety, you hear a lot of like, well, safeties are boring. Like, all they're doing is over the top work. They're not really involved in a lot of the action. It's just a really drawn out, boring evaluation. So what do you say to people who say that?
I think you need to take the good with the bad. I think there are things that you can learn from those reps where they are doing, you know, quote unquote, nothing as well. Especially for like quarters based guys. So you say a boundary safety is chasing a, you know, an outside zone in the backside. Is he keeping the angle that he should be taking for the cutback eventually, if it gets to that point? Are you taking complete reps off and really not even chasing backside? What do you look like when it comes to your effort at the beginning of the game versus towards the end of the game when you start to get a little bit tired on those plays specifically? And so there's always, in my opinion, something that you can look at on every single rep. And, you know, maybe you don't take it into account all that much, or you don't weigh it as much, you know, those effort plays or non-effort plays at times, you know, from the safety position. But I think that it also allows you to not skip through, but maybe fast forward through some of those run plays where you are not a part of the run fit, you know, say if you are a middle of the field close guy, And then you're just able to get more tape out of these guys. You can watch four or five games in the time where you might watch, you know, two to three games of, you know, a more, you know, say a quarterback who you're watching literally every single rep of the guy. So I think that you can watch more tape of these safeties to really get a good feel of their consistency over a longer period of time. For me, I really enjoy the mental aspect of playing safety. And so for me, seeing how these guys process route combinations, and if they're able to understand, like, hey, if number two is out fast, this is what I got to look for from number one. And seeing how quickly they trigger that and seeing how they fit with their specific defenses, because there are so many different types of defenses and so many different responsibilities at that position specifically. Is a guy a field safety or a boundary safety? How much does the coaching staff trust those guys, you know, to carry number two vertically? So I think when you look at that, a lot of people would think that a field safety in a quarters based defense, you know, that's the guy who is the number one guy. But really, you look at guys like Antoine Winfield Jr., you look at I can't even think of his name right now, but number 24 for Georgia coming up this year, who's going to be a junior. I think he was all SEC last year.
Malachi Starks.
Yes. Yeah. Those guys, they're boundary safeties, and they're boundary safeties because you have to be able to carry number three from the opposite side of the field vertically in a lot of these quarters-based defenses. That's if number one to your side isn't running a post or running straight at you. So you need to be able to cover a little bit more of the field. And there's just so much more to the position that I think a lot of people understand, just because I don't think many people in what we do have really been able to, at the lower level, dive into the schematics of these defenses to truly understand what the role of a safety is in these different defenses.
Yeah, Dalton, so you hit on it a little bit there, but I'm going to give you a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of geek out a little bit here. So when I was shooting DMs to people like, hey, do you want to do this series, blah, 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 you chomped at the bit a bit to talk about safeties. So, like, what do you love most about breaking down these safeties compared to the consensus around draft Twitter?
Yeah, I think it's the overall versatility for me, because you get so many different types of players, so many different body types. You look at somebody like Andrew Mukuba, who is like legitimately 180 pounds soaking wet and has the ability, in my opinion, to be that nickel guy and play in man coverage. And then you also have, like I said, guys like Kyle Hamilton, so much fun to watch. Antoine Winfield Jr., who was the undersized guy, didn't have a ton of length, but somehow had a ton of ball production, and it didn't really make sense for him to be able to cover a lot of these tight ends. And, you know, did he struggle a little bit with some size sometimes? Sure, because he is 5'8". But what they show, what these guys show, and I think what I like most about it, is it's not just an athlete contest, because you can legitimately be like a Brian Branch, run a 4.6, play primarily in the slot, and still survive because of your mind. And I think that that's the biggest thing that I enjoy when it comes to safeties, is that it's a lot like linebackers. You don't need to run a 4.4, because the guy who runs a 4.4, and I'm not going to call out names, but there's a linebacker that played in Florida for a while, and was a very, very high pick, who ran a 4.4, and came from playing running back at one point in his career, who was never a very good linebacker, because if you take a half a second to process something, you're already at a 4.8. And then if you take any longer than that and you have a little bit of a brain freeze, you are going to be slower than Josie Jewell, who is surviving at linebacker despite running like a 5.0. And that's what it comes down to. You're going to have more range as a safety if you can process, this is what's happening. That number two is out quick. I know number one's going to be running a vertical route here. I need to get to the sideline. And you're able to process that immediately. You are able to cover more ground running a 4.7 than Dax Hill running a 4.3 if he is a tick slow. And for me, it is the mental aspect of the position that I love more than anything else.
I love that. I love that. Kyle Hamilton's another good example. Like people overthought his 4'6". Yeah. But
yeah, he's a 4'6", but he also has the wingspan of an albatross. So like he covers more ground than you would think.
And his reaction, his read react is just unbelievable. His trigger is unbelievable. So like it doesn't matter. And I think to a more steep extent, I think Cameron Kitchens out of Miami might be a decent example of this too. He tested as a, I don't know what you might have hated his tape. Might have hated his tape, but
well, this is something we're going to get to Cameron Kitchens in specifically a little bit later here.
Yeah, but he tested as a historically bad safety, athletically, historically bad safety. But if you watch his tape, you're like, but this guy's range is pretty good, and it's because it comes ranges. Well, and we'll talk about range more, but I don't want to jump the gun. We'll talk about that when we get there. But so I had John Ludyard on to talk about defensive linemen and specifically edge rushers. He had this idea that I'm going to start like bringing to everybody. And it was what his core tenets, he has four core tenets of being a good pass rusher. And so like, I've just started asking people now, like, I was like, that's a great way to break down a position. That's a great way to like, kind of like a checklist system, right? If they don't have this, like, then I don't know what to do with them. So what are your non-negotiables for scouting safeties, your core tenets for scouting safeties?
Yeah. For me, it's a lot like quarterback. You can only base your opinion off of what you see them do. And so for me, it's how do you run your offense at quarterback? And for me, it's how do you run your defense as a safety? How quick of a trigger do you have in your specific responsibilities? So for me, it's that mental trigger, first and foremost, the ability to understand, you know, some of your more basic, I guess, route concepts that you're going to see on a daily basis. What type of tape study do you show from your ability to trigger? And I think that those are the big things for me, is how quick you are in your defensive responsibility. I think the other thing for me, and it's just like arm strength or arm talent, is you have to have a requisite amount of physicality. And now this has burned me in the past, because there are guys who I've seen who I don't think have the requisite physicality to play at the NFL level at a high level. And I'm just going to name names. It's Julian Blackman. I absolutely hated his tape because I didn't think he had it. And he showed me at the NFL level, whatever physicality he was able to play with, he was good. And he is a great safety at the NFL level. But I do think that there's a requisite physicality. There's a requisite ability to tackle. There was a safety this year who I would not have touched with a 10-foot pole, because in the very first game I watched of him, I saw him get pinballed 5 or 6 times in a single game. At that point, I don't care how you tackle in other games. If you have one game like that at the NFL level, we're going to lose that football game, because you as a safety are our last line of defense. If I can't trust you to make an open field tackle, and you're not going to make every single tackle, I understand that. If you are completely physically overshadowed by that ball carrier, I'm sorry. Those NFL guys are going to be better. And I know that you might have just had one bad day, but that bad day, being the first tape that I saw, is going to affect the way that I look at the rest of your tape. You're going to have to be unbelievable after that. So I think requisite physicality is a huge thing. And then just the mental trigger for me is the other thing.
I think Grant Delpit's probably another example out of that requisite toughness. His junior year, like everybody loved his sophomore year tape. His junior year tape, there were quite a few missed tackles. And then it came out like, oh, this guy's... Yeah. And I think understanding some of the context of what we don't... The information we don't have as well is hard. Huge. It's probably the hardest part.
It's the hardest part.
And then it comes out like, oh, well, Grant Delpit played through a high ankle sprain his entire junior year. Like things like that. And then he gets to the NFL level and he's a bullet. He's a bullet. He'll fit the run. He will come downhill. He'll tackle in the open field. So I think... that's another case where it's like, oh yeah, that a lot of people didn't see that requisite toughness. And I think I know what safety you're talking about, if he happened to play football in Southern California this past year.
No, he actually didn't. Okay. No, he actually played in the SEC.
Okay.
But that's as far as I'll go with it.
Okay. Sounds good. But I do like that as well. And one thing that I've talked about on this podcast a lot, and with every single position that I've talked about one trait that if I had to pick one trait, that supersedes every position. Like if you don't have this, you won't be an NFL player. For the most part, you might be a role player, whatever, but you won't be a good NFL football player. And then I think that's fluidity. I think that's having the ability to change directions and not having stiff hips. So how does that kind of fluidity, change of direction, triggering, kind of those sorts of things play into your evaluation for a safety?
For a safety, it's a lot less than for a corner, just because I think overall it is a less reactive or less physically reactive position than, you know, playing as a corner. Now, if you're going to be playing a ton of slot reps, it is a little bit different. And that's, you know, we get into the versatility of playing the safety position. And you might be, you know, a Brian Branch in college where you play 85% of your snaps in the slot and you need that fluidity. And I think Brian Branch is a perfect example of somebody who, you know, ran a 4.6 and isn't the fastest guy in the world on a track, but the fluidity that he has. And it's not, for me, it's not just fluidity, because there's guys with incredibly quick feet and, you know, obviously rest in peace to Jeff Gladney, somebody who that frenetic footwork is unbelievable to watch. But if a guy has unbelievably fast feet, but they're inefficient feet, you're going to struggle to mirror guys, you know, in the slot as a safety or as a corner. But I think that overall fluidity, that ability to hinge the hips and be like a gazelle or a deer, that is where you can really show off your athletic ability that doesn't show up on the track.
Awesome. Awesome. So again, we talked a little bit about range, and I think I want to start with range because it is one of those positions where people would typically say, like, you have to be a good athlete to have range. And I don't think that's true. I don't think that's really true. So talking about range in particular, what are you looking for to know, like, yes, this guy has good range? Because again, a lot of people will say, like, well, if he doesn't have 4.4 speed, then he doesn't have range. But again, we talked about Kyle Hamilton. We've mentioned Cam Kitchens, which I know you're going to talk a little bit more about. So what are you looking for in terms of this player has range or this player does not have range?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it with range, especially at the college level, comes down to your assignments. And I think being a single high guy, Cameron Kitchens was able to show that a little bit more, doing a little bit more single high stuff for that Miami defense. But again, I think it just all comes down to the trigger. And range for a lot of people just kind of means like, oh, well, how can you get to the center field, to the sideline really well? But for me, it's everything else as well. It's, you know, when you trigger downhill, are you able to come and cut off that crossing route as that backside safety? Are you able to trigger and get downhill and get to that spot, get into that passing lane and break up the pass or intercept it? That's something that, God, man, when I watch Dax Hill trigger downhill as a split field safety or even from the slot, like, that's the type of explosiveness, physical explosiveness, that you also get from being able to process things quickly and get to the spot. So yes, it's a combination of your ability to trigger and your ability to actually physically get there. But as long as you're not running a 4.8 out there as a safety, if you have a 4.6, you can still have great range, because like I said with linebacker, it's about how quickly you trigger. Because if you have a little bit of brain fog with what your assignment is, what your responsibility is on a given play, you're going to be slower as a 4.2 guy than you are as a 4.6 guy if you are a half second late.
Yeah. I think I remember a 2020 guy who I watched his tape, and he ended up being my safety one that year. And he just kept, it felt like every pass play, this guy is disrupting. He's just jumping lanes. He's disruptive. And he's just making every single play. And it's because he was triggering downhill and he was able to close those gaps that you're talking about. And that was Xavier McKinney out of Alabama. It's like, this guy is in his back pedal and he is hitting crossers at lightning speed. Like, how is this guy doing this?
I'm so glad you brought up Xavier McKinney, because this takes us to scouting the helmet a little bit. I am just in general going to trust Nick Saban defensive backs more, specifically when it comes to the mental side of the game, because I think the way that he coaches, the way that he implements his defense, the playbook that he has, that those guys have to learn and know all of the different checks, that is an entirely mental defense. And that's why you get some of these athletes that come in there that do not play right away, that have to take a year or two before you get on the field. And that's what was so impressive with Terrion Arnold, is he came in as a freshman, you know, obviously not a true freshman, but as a freshman, and played and survived, and just surviving in a Nick Saban defense as a defensive back, as a freshman, is a massive thing. And then that's why you saw so much growth from him in year two starting, is because he started to get the mental side of things that went along with his Gary Payton ability to play defense and not really get beat up. And I think that that goes from his basketball background a little bit. But yeah, guys like Xavier McKinney, so intelligent when it comes to defense. Another guy who didn't run, you know, fantastic, but had the mental trigger, and what had, you know, especially with somebody like Xavier McKinney, who ended up being a little bit more of a free safety in the NFL level, playing more of a hybrid role on the back end still for Nick Saban, but coming downhill and playing as that downhill guy a little bit more. You're right, that mental trigger with him is what made him, for me, safety too, because I am the Antoine Winfield Jr. stan from that 2020 class. But Xavier McKinney, I knew he would be a good pro no matter what, and it's because of where the defense that he came from and what I could trust him to be able to do at the next level in any defense.
And look at those two guys, Antoine Winfield and Xavier McKinney, are now two of the highest paid safeties in the NFL. So
yep.
Trust Dalton's eyes. Trust Dalton's eyes. So moving on to, again, you talked about that innate, you just have to have natural toughness to play safety. You have to. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to see it. And you mentioned it a little bit, but I think, again, tackling is important for any defensive position, right? But mm-hmm. And I think it less so for some of those, like those, again, cover three true free safeties. Like, if those guys can't make every single tackle, I think there's a little more grace there. But for the most part, safeties are situational one-on-one players. Like, you'll have those box guys that will fit the run, and I think they're very valuable. Those nickel guys who can come in and sling into a fit as well. But for the most part, if you're a nickel and you're playing in the flat, like, you're going to get in one-on-one situations with some tight ends and running backs. If you are that free safety, you are, again, that last line of defense. You're going to be in one-on-one situations. So talking just about tackling then, what are you looking – again, it's pretty easy to see who's a good tackler and who's not. But is there any areas, like, room for grace that you show? Like, is it like – if this guy's diving in ankles, but he's somehow making every tackle, I'm cool with that. Or is like, that's not going to translate. What are you looking for from that, like, breaking down that innate toughness a little bit deeper?
Yeah. I think if you're playing in the alley, and you're a little bit more of an ankle biter, I'm okay with that. On the back end, I would much prefer to see my safeties be a little bit more, like a catch and carry type of tackle. I want you to do your best to slow guys down in the open field and try to allow for your help to at least get a little bit closer for these tackles, because you're not going to make every tackle. But if you come out like a bat out of hell and dive at somebody's ankles going 100 miles an hour and you miss that tackle, that's a touchdown. So being able to slow guys down and make tackles, especially when you are, you know, the Andrew Mukuba type, who's 180 pounds, tackling Jonathan Taylor, it's probably not going to go over all that well 100% of the time. So being able to break down, make him make a decision on how to beat you and slow down his downhill process is, for me, incredibly important when it comes to being a tackler. The other thing, and this is where I get back to Cameron Kitchens, this is where I get to Jonathan Abrams, being out of control, not just with your speed as a tackler, but your tackling technique is huge. The thing that scares me most about Cameron Kitchens is dropping the crown of his helmet, which I thought he did way too much. And it terrifies me just, you know, for his health long term. Because if there's one thing that we know, is neck injuries are completely debilitating. And so for a guy to drop his helmet, it's not something that I can necessarily grade against per se, because he's still making tackles, and I don't think that he played out of control as a tackler like Jonathan Abram, who, I mean, he'll go out and hurt his own teammates diving at people. I think there is a way to protect yourself while still being physical enough, and I think that that's my biggest issue with Cameron Kitchens as an evaluator, was, is this dude going to be able to keep himself healthy as a tackler? I don't know. I think that that's something that somebody's going to have to get into his ear consistently, because it takes a lot of repetition to break a bad habit like that.
I think the last thing then, Dalton, I want to hit on a little bit is something we haven't really talked about a little bit with Kyle Hamilton, but like, I think we need to round out this conversation with back end safeties are expected to make plays on the football, right? Like if that's your line of defense, you're in most cases, unless it's a busted coverage, you are the second defender in a one-on-one situation. So you have a clear path to the football most of the time. Again, it gets really muddy. And so I want to talk about ball production a little bit, but also with we talked about with Kyle Hamilton, that one-on-one ability. We haven't seen a lot of that. And again, a lot of that, it goes back to then, like we're talking about man-to-man technique, a lot of corner technique, right? So that might be a little bit misplaced on this podcast. It's like, well, have quick feet and don't, you know, open your hips too early or too late. Like, right. But like,
yeah.
So ball production though, I think incorporates then playing through the hands, being tough at the top of routes, and being tough at the catch point. So if you have a safety, and this is what you fell in love with Antoine Winfield, right? Like he finds a way to make plays on the football despite the fact that he's 5'8". So how important is that ball production to you then? And does that equal they have to create turnovers, or in a case like, I mean, Winfield did, but if they're just consistently disruptive at the catch point, is that good enough for you?
Yeah, I think being disruptive at the catch point is just an innate trait. I don't think that it's something that you can teach. The timing that goes into being able to wrap around a guy and not wrap him with that offhand is huge. And, you know, a lot of people talk about length in those situations. I think it even has more to do with the angles that you're able to take and how sneaky you are, because somebody like Antoine Winfield Jr. can kind of sneak that hand in. And again, with him being 5'8 and being, you know, over 200 pounds, he is a bowling ball. So he is physical at the top of routes like that. And I think that length can be very, very big, but I do think even more than length is just an innate ability, an innate possession that you have in your mind to be able to stick a hand through the hands of a wide receiver, not pick up penalties, and be able to get to the catch point. And I think that, you know, taking this from an offensive standpoint, guys who are able to really high point, which, you know, a lot of guys jump and a lot of guys make leaping plays, but to consistently be able to leap and get the ball at its highest point is something that I thought Xavier Leggett did at an unbelievable level. And it was amazing to me when I saw that he had like 8.5-inch hands, because it doesn't make any sense that he would be so strong at the catch point with small hands like that. But like I'm trying to get with here is that the physical characteristics, again, aren't necessarily as important as just having that innate ability to find the crease and get into passing lanes. And to have that timing is something I just don't think that you can teach it. And a guy like Xavier McKinney, a guy like Antoine Winfield Jr., he just had it. And that's something that we also have to do is say, like, just because a guy has 7 interceptions doesn't mean that he has good ball production. Anybody can stand there and catch an arm punt. It's what you're able to do. What do your interceptions, what do your pass breakups look like compared to other guys? And that's why, again, having 5-6 games of a safety that you can really, really push through is important, so you can get a better feel for that ball production that they do have. If you have the ability to, you know, have a catapult account where you can actually go through and see where the interceptions in the game are, where the pass breakups are, in these, and you're able to look, what is the quality of the ball production? If it's high quality stuff, they probably have that innate ability. And I think a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry at corner, who in zone coverage had unbelievable ball production like that, ability to get through the hands when he is playing from off, when he's able to see the quarterback. But it's different when you have to turn and round and run as well. And I think a lot of what hurt Xavier McKinney, but Kool-Aid McKinstry, is that inability to, when his back was turned to the football, be able to go up and get it and find it along the sideline. I think that's where he got beat a couple of times this year. I think that's kind of what hurt his evaluation for a lot of people. And you need to be able to try to find those reps at safety as well when we're talking about guys either in the slot or playing as a back end guy when they have to turn and burn. Are they able to find the football in the air? Because that is something that I think is an underrated thing when it comes to safeties and corners as well, is that ability to track the football like a wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you brought that up. We got all the way to the end here, and we finally talked about ball tracking as well. So
yeah,
it's one thing to cover that ground, but if you still can't find the football, then
None of it matters.
None of it matters.
No matter how much ground you cover, if you are blind in the air, you're going to get beat.
Yep. Yeah. I think we saw that a lot with, like, I think Georgia cornerbacks are starting to get that reputation, which, again, it goes back to helmet scouting. And I will never just be like, well, that's a good Georgia cornerback. He can't track the football. But a lot of Georgia cornerbacks have gotten that reputation. You know, Tyson Campbell and Kelee Ringo are the two that really struggled to, like, they could be in perfect position and they just could not find the football. They just couldn't find the football. So finding that football, even if you are doing everything technically, you know, sound, find the football. If you can't make the play on the football, somebody else
Finding the football, I want to point out, is not just being able to turn and find the football, but it's also the ability to play through the hands, because there are a lot of defenses, especially these days, who at the college level tell guys to play through the hands instead of turning and finding the football as well.
Yeah, and so this goes back to what we talked about with Dane. Then when Dane did wide receivers, as Dane talked about late hands, if a wide receiver's not showing you hands, that really tricks up some defensive backs as well.
Yep.
Some safeties back trying to find the football there. But Dalton, again, I always give my guests one opportunity here at the end. Do you think that we missed anything? Is there anything about the safety position that we haven't talked about that you feel like is vital and we need to add to this podcast?
Yeah, I just think bringing up, you kind of touched on it very early, but I do believe that safety is becoming, I think it was valued properly for a long time, but I do think safety is going to be a position where teams are able to get guys, you know, your Brian Branches and other guys in rounds two who are high level guys, just because there's so much that you have to ask from these guys. If you can get them in the right position, they can be unbelievably talented NFL players. And I think that it's a position overall with the reintroduction of 12 personnel, and with, I think, teams probably going to get a little bit bigger on offense and try to play a little bit more physically, because now it's a bunch of 215-pound linebackers out there as well. Being able to have a safety who can come down into the box and survive, being able to play on the back end, have that versatility, I think is huge. And I think defenses are really going to start to value guys who can do all of those things for your defense.
I love it. Brian Branch is a great way to like close. He did just play pretty much nickel at Alabama, but dude, that dude made every single play that came his way. Mm-hmm. And the innate toughness you're talking about, he could step down to the box. Dude did not miss tackles. One of the easiest evals of last season as well. And even though he was kind of pigeonholed into, and he didn't really break that pigeonhole with Detroit, right? He was a box nickel player for them. Like, that's what he did, but that's what he's really good at. And so they got like a bargain in the second round and one of the already probably the best box nickel defenders in the NFL, I would say. Again, coming from a Saban defense where,
it just makes sense.
Right. It feels like the Bama to, well, maybe not now that DeBoer is taking over. We don't know what's going to go on in that building, but like the Lions might've had a pathway there. Like, these guys play exactly how we want them to play, like specifically speaking about Detroit. But all right, Dalton, I think that's enough ground to cover, enough range, if you will, on this podcast about safeties. Again, you are more than welcome to come back on the Daft on Draft podcast anytime.
Hey, thank you for having me. Love talking ball. Love talking safeties. Guys, stop hating on the position. Find the love in the mental side of the position, guys. We'll be right back.